Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Heard a lot of complaints.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview, is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
Bonus time on the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, July 3rd, 2020. Of course, it's the podcast. You can listen to it anytime. The headline, just to give you a sense, if you're listening to this like a year from now, the headline in the Chicago Sun-Times, this is what's on people's mind. Stakeholders aim to keep Englewood homicide-free over 4th of July weekend. Violence in the city of Chicago. It's an ongoing situation. I've been living in the city of Chicago since 1981, and there's been violence in the city every year since I moved here. And it seems like the city of Chicago either is incapable or indifferent to this problem. You decide. Anyway, that's the headline. And on July 3rd, 2020, the day before the 4th of July, as I do with all bonus guests, I ask my distinguished guest to introduce him or herself. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
All right. Hey, Ben. This is Dixon Romeo. Lived in Chicago my whole life, South Shore native, graduate, CPS graduate, Skinner Elementary and Kenwood Academy. Grinnell College graduate with a bachelor's in economics. And I do local school council work and advocacy on the south side, in particular at Parkside Academy.
Yes, we thank you very much for coming on the show, Dixon. I've been talking about this interview for a while. I've been talking about local school councils, introducing people to the whole the concept, the topic. It's come up in relation to the issue of police in schools. And I heard, Dixon, it was a virtual birthday party for a mutual friend. And he was so funny on that. Not to put pressure on you, Dixon, but he was so funny at that virtual. I go, I got to get this guy on my show. So I reached out. We cut a deal. Here he is. And I hope I didn't do too much of a buildup. Dixon, before we talk about local school councils, the role they play, police in schools, and how much authority local school councils have, et cetera, and so forth, why don't you go a little bit deeper into your background? You're from Chicago. You're obviously much younger than I am. And I talked about violence in Chicago at the top of the show. My goodness, I talk about it since I moved here in 81. You've lived your whole life in the city of Chicago. Do you have any thoughts as to why we seem so incapable as a city of confronting this issue?
Sure, yeah, Ben. So, like you said, I'm 26 years old. You know, I think I'm pretty old. But I think that, you know, as like you said, my whole life living in Chicago, living in South Shore, you know, I've had friends lost to gun violence. I've had family members, you know, lost to violence or deal with violence in the community. And it's a terrible issue, right? And I think that the reason that it's so hard for us as a city to address it, and I'm sure you've heard this before, I personally, you know, speaking for myself, I think we don't do a good enough job, or sometimes any job, at, you know, getting people jobs, right? Addressing the root cause of why we have violence. I think about the fact that there are folks in my neighborhood who have been conditioned to, you know, writing folks off, writing young adults off, young black men off, young kids off, instead of saying, how can we advocate to get them the resources they need that I have, right? And that's one of the things that, you know, I'm not trying to segue out of it, but that's one of the things that my big thing being on the LSC at Parkside is about is that how can we get additional resources to our students and to the community so that we can actually address the, you know, the issue and affect folks' lives, right? You know, growing up, like I said, I lived in South Shore my whole life. Parkside was a school down the street from my house, right? And my mother intentionally did not send me to my neighborhood school. She went out of her way to have me test. You know, I got in. She would drive me every day to Skinner Classical School, which I think now is called Skinner West, because of those things, right? She thought that there was community violence. She thought that there was, you know, inequities and, you know, structural racism stuff that affected why that school was like that. You know, as a kid, I'm like, you know, I want to go to school with my son. He played basketball at the Y. He played basketball at the court. So why can't I go to school with him? But she understood institutional racism, and she understood how going to that magnet program would change the trajectory of my life, and it did that, right? So I think if we really want to address violence, we need to make every neighborhood school as good as our magnet school. So we need to really reevaluate how we look at violence, right? I think I don't want to go on too long of a tangent, but I think, you know, if we're showing up to things after the fact, after someone's been shot, after, you know, by someone in the community, by a police officer, by anything, it's late, right? In terms of having really addressing the issue because it's already occurred, right? The investments that we made 5 years ago are going to affect stuff that's happening this summer. So that's why I think we as a city haven't really been able to address it. So,
all right.
No funny punchline there, but.
No, this is serious stuff. All right, and so let me give you an opportunity to be king of the universe. For the last several years, I have unsuccessfully crusaded against, in my columns and on the airwaves, against a TIF-funded program, a TIF-funded project on the north side of Chicago called Lincoln Yards. I was unsuccessful, okay? I did not have enough power as the developers who had a lot more influence with the mayor and the alderman than I did. $1.3 billion, Dixon, dedicated. Okay. $1.3 billion in property tax dollars for a dead broke city is being dedicated to gentrify an already gentrifying neighborhood, all right? I believe that is a complete waste of public dollars. So let me say to you, let's say you were Mayor Dixon, Mayor Romeo, and you had $1.3 billion at your disposal to spend to try to lower the crime rate, lower the shootings in the city of Chicago, and improve the schools. What would you do with that $1.3 billion? As opposed to gentrifying an already gentrifying neighborhood on the north side, how would you use that money?
Well, I'd have to say this is a very Chicago thing. I don't know how I was a regular guy, now I'm the mayor. but I think that, I think, you know, assuming is it yearly, is it a one-time influx, you know, obviously that's not the point of this exercise. I think the point of this exercise is to talk about priorities, right? And so I think that $1.3 billion threw up to me, I think would be way better suited having more staff in our schools, non-carceral staff, right? More librarians, more counselors, more therapists, more teachers. Despite, you know, class sizes, smaller class sizes, I think putting a good chunk of that $1.3 billion for that would be useful. I think putting a large amount of that money towards mental health services would be extremely useful. And I think putting a large, and the other, I keep saying large amount, so we'll say that equal chunk. And I think taking the other percent and putting it towards safe and affordable housing for folks is really, really useful. I think that, and we can talk about this later when we talk about the stuff we've done at Parkside and about LSEs, but running for LSC, being on LSC, meeting more and more people in my community that I wouldn't ordinarily meet. Every day I realize how much of an issue housing is for folks, especially in South Shore, but, you know, across the city, and how much that lends itself to issues of, you know, poverty and crime. So I would, those would be my three chunks: okay. Education, healthcare, and housing.
All right. And just to answer your first point, it's $1.3 billion over about 20 years. So whatever the math is, I was not that good at math. You divide $1.3 billion by 20 and you'll have a yearly allotment that Mayor Romeo can spend. All right. You're a local school council. Explain to people what a local school council is. And by the way, just to help out, a lot of our listeners are not from Chicago. So South Shore's community. Well, you tell folks where South Shore is.
Yeah, sure. South Shore is on the south side of the city, right next to the lake and Jackson Park. It's close to the University of Chicago, mostly African-American, you know, a lot of homeowners, a lot of renters, really great place to live. I love it. I've lived there my whole life, so I'm biased, clearly. But, you know, I think Chicago's the greatest city in the world, and South Shore is one of the greatest neighborhoods in that great city. Go ahead.
No, and so Parkside Community Academy is where?
It's on 69th and East End, in South Shore. You know, elementary school. You know, we do now preschool through eighth grade. And I got started on the local school council for it. You know, after I graduated college and I came back, you know, I got a job from working. And one of my big things was, I wanted to get involved in the community, and I thought, well, this school's been by my house my whole life. Folks have been saying, you know, it's, for whatever reason, there's things that they don't like about it, why they won't send their kids there, or whatever, whatever. And I thought, you know, why don't I go see what I can do? I can volunteer my time. I think I'm a pretty smart guy, right? I can do something. And so I ran for LSC, and then the last, you know, 2 years, we've been working on improving things in the school. I think we're in the right direction.
Now, local school councils, for folks who don't know, are boards that oversee individual schools that consist of a couple of community reps, people who live in the area but are not parents of kids, parents of students in the school, and a couple of teachers. And so when you ran for...
And the principal.
How could I forget the principal? Thank you. So when you ran for local school council, were you opposed, or were you the only one running in that election?
Yeah, so when I ran, for as far as community members, I was not opposed. It was just me. So the debate was, you know, me, myself, and I. It was riveting. I think myself did better than me, but I was a close second. and, you know, I think it showed, right? I think a lot of folks in our community, you know, we've been told a lot of promises, a lot of good things. And so there's like a no-win philosophy, right? Folks don't participate, so they think there's no point. But I'm glad to say that this time around, whenever the elections do happen post-corona, we do have, it is more than just me running. And I think that's a really, really good thing, that folks are engaged and like want to get active and want to be a part of the school. Yeah.
So how much authority does a local school council have over something like a budget at a school?
The total authority, the LSC, we get to hire and fire the principal. We get to approve the budget, and the allocation of the budget, not necessarily its size, right? That's determined by CPS. But where money goes and what it's used for, the LSC has really, really strong abilities in that. And finally, we get to do the CIWP, like the strategy and work plan of the school. What's our mission? What are we working for? What are our goals? How are we measuring them? Things like that. So, you know, when I talk to folks I know in college, and they're like, yeah, you know, I saw you on Facebook talking about your school. Like, so what is that? Is it like a parent teacher association? And I'm like, no, it's a little different than that. It's a very Chicago specific thing, but it's very serious stuff, and it's very important that I think the community, parents, and you know, staff, and get this type of input. I think it's a really great thing about the city.
So, give us an example of some of the decisions that the local school council at Parkside has made in terms of like how you allocated the money. I understand you essentially get an allowance from the Board of Education. It's partly determined by the number of students in your school. So when you have right. that money, give me an example of a decision you made, like how you allocated that money.
kid. So I think one of the things we did was, our goal is to have as many teachers in the school as possible. And I think this year we had to make a choice between getting an additional teacher, and don't misquote me, but I think an additional librarian. It was a very long meeting. And we made a choice between, you know, taking away money from some, you know, some things like, you know, I think a lot of schools spend money on shirts and stuff like that, right? And so stuff like that, but also we had to unfortunately let go of an administrator, but the benefit was that we got to keep additional teachers. And I think that we also, because of some of the grant writing and things that we've been doing, getting additional resources from folks on fundraising, we were able to cut a lot of costs also in terms of like having students pay for certain, you know, things, right? Cutting down on graduation fees, cutting down on, you know, t-shirts, extracurriculars, and school supplies. Because, you know, thankfully, because of me and another community rep in LSU as a whole, we've been able to go to community members, we've been able to pull folks in and help us write grants, and take the lead in writing a lot of grants so that we could get, you know, stuff for the school. So that's an example of LSE's making a decision that for your listeners outside of Chicago, you know, ordinarily would be up to like the district office or the principal told me.
And one of the disadvantages, or one of the advantages, I should say, of schools in wealthier neighborhoods gets to that point of what you were talking about, fundraising. So obviously the wealthier the parent base, the more money a school can raise to pay for additional services, supplemental services that the board does not provide an allowance for. Do you find that Parkside and South Shore is at a disadvantage, let's say, when compared to, like a Skinner, the Magnet school that you went to, or a Northside school or a Hyde Park school that has more affluent parent base?
Yeah, 100%. I talked to an LSC member on a school up on the north side, and they were talking about their friends of, you know, said school had, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And I think, you know, with that, you know, you don't have to think about how do we get extra money for buses for the kids that want to do certain programs or do certain sports, right? Like, you don't have to. It's not a question. You know, it's there. Well, if you need money to supplement an after school staff person or something, you know, you make a phone call, you get your folks together, and you look up and boom, you've got $100,000, right? And you can cover someone's salary and whatever, right? And that's definitely a disadvantage. It's definitely a disadvantage. I think that luckily at Parkside, we haven't had to make those type of tough choices yet. Choices that stuff have been in positions where we had to say, man, I wish we had an extra $200,000, partly because of the grant writing, right? Like, we've been lucky to have, you know, Children's First Fund, Frontline Food, some other places help them with some of the different initiatives we've been doing that have been able to, you know, get us the access to those resources. That's been really, you know, beneficial. But there's like privilege in that, right? Like, I went to Grinnell College and I worked in the development office, so I understand how to write grants a little bit, right? So when we do grant writing, I think I maybe have a little more privilege and access than other community members and other schools in South Shore on the south or west side, right? And so that's definitely known. And I think hopefully in the future, maybe I can come back and talk about ways we've worked together right at schools. We'll see. But that's something I would hope to do.
Yeah, I hope people in the central office are listening. Not that they would do anything if they were listening, but just figure out some way to address this inequity that Dixon is describing. If you're an affluent school in the north side, I've heard north side schools, Dixon, that raise money to pay for like a science teacher. So they could, you know, or an advanced math teacher, or a drama program, or a music program. In other words, they can raise so much money that they can afford to hire an extra teacher or two. I don't know how we can consider that fair if that's not taken into the equation when they dole out money to the schools.
Definitely.
By the way, 100%. Does Parkside have a drama, music, dance teacher, anything like that?
Yeah, we do have features in the art. Off the top of my head, you know, we have like 29, 20, 30 features. Off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure we do have, I know for sure we have art. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take a specific breakdown, but we definitely have art. We definitely have a dance program. I'm not sure about drama, but I'm super sure about the first two.
All right, let's move on to the big issue of the day in the city of Chicago in terms of the public schools. That has to do with whether there should be police officers in a public school. The mayor and the leaders of the Board of Education have said they want to continue having police officers in the school. And the reason for this, they said, is that local school councils have approved having police in the schools. And so they're just following the interests of the local school councils, the requests of the local school councils. Does your school have police officers? And if so, do you want to continue having police officers in your school?
I think that's a... So I'm going to push back then. I think the question is... So first of all, we don't. I think that... But I think this issue, as I've read about it and talked to folks about it, and as someone in the community who I know some of the leaders in for the police free schools, high school students, shout out to Wing, who used to go to Hyde Park. I think the issue is structural, right? I think COVID has taught us a lot about that, right? I'm 26, right? If I were to be exposed to the virus, I'm pretty sure I'd be asymptomatic, right? I haven't been, but you know, I'm pretty sure I would be. That doesn't mean that I can't spread the virus. That doesn't mean that if someone else gets spread to it, it's deadly to them, right? I think, you know, I'm an able-bodied person. I don't need a ramp or a rail to get upstairs, right? But that doesn't mean that there are other folks who do. And it doesn't mean that as a city, you know, society, whatever, we shouldn't have those things, right? When I think about police in schools, what we're talking about is the young woman, Ms. Howard at Marshall Academy, right? We're talking about someone who had an issue with a cell phone, ended up getting dragged downstairs, got tased, was stepped on, you know, stomped, right? You know, so there are a lot of schools, I'm sure there are a lot of schools where this stuff doesn't happen. But from what I've heard from folks about the data, and about the negative experiences of that, and the fact that, like you said, there may be other things we could spend that money on. I think the question is not whether individuals are okay with it. I think the question is, overall, is it doing good or is it doing harm? And are there other things we could be putting the money to? And so that's what I think about when I think about that question. Because I think there are folks who could say, yeah, you know, we have officers in our school and it's fine. We haven't had any incidents. And that's really good. That's a blessing. Is that the case for everyone? And is it worth the amount of money? That's what I think is the core part of that issue. And I believe, based on the data and based on the fact that, you know, I watched the stream of the meeting. I can't remember what it was. I don't know if it was the Board of Ed or the City Council, whatever it was. And it was just super clear to me that, you know, the guy was talking about the number of arrests and the school to prison pipeline and all the other things. I don't think it's worth it. I don't know if it's clearly not worth it. So that's how I feel.
I believe that probably was the meeting that you saw, probably yesterday's city council meeting. There was a committee meeting of the city council. They were discussing this. I don't know. I don't know if that was what you were. It's on my mind because I was.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, and they. I think that was it. The aldermen are discussing this, and this gets back to the role the local school councils play, and Dixon, I'm going to attribute this to age, a difference. I'm a lot older than you, so I tend to be jaded by what I've seen over the years in the city of Chicago. You have the advantage of youth. And so you have not been as jaded as I am. But let me point this out, get your reaction to this. What I find really irritating about the discussion of whether there should be police in schools is that, in my humble opinion, Really, this is a matter of budgets. And mayors of the city of Chicago decided that they're going to have the school system pay the salaries of police officers. So instead of the salaries coming out of the police department budget, it comes out of the Chicago Public Schools budget. And because they control the Board of Education, they get the board members to sign on to it. So it's not really, in my humble opinion, about whether the Parkside School or the Skinner School or the Ray School or the Newberry School. Their local school council wants the police officers. It's the fact that this is a convenient, relatively easy way to get the public schools to pick up police salaries, if you follow what I'm saying. And that part of the decision that Chicago has to make is whether the police department pays for those police salaries or the Board of Education pays for them. If the police department pays for the salaries, that frees up money in public school money that the Parksides of the world could spend on things other than police officers. Do you agree with me on that point?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, definitely you have the historical knowledge and background and expertise. And I think that as I see it, you know, whatever the, I know we're budgeting certain dollars or attached to certain things and I have to go to that depending on where it's coming from, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that money, the majority of our money is better spent on things that help folks improve. And I'm not convinced that policing schools or spending the majority of our budget on policing is good for young people like myself or older folks like yourself.
Dixie, were there police officers at Kenwood when you were a student there?
Yeah, there were.
And what's your memory of the experience with them?
All schools have security officers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Kenwood had police officers when I was there. I'm pretty sure they probably still do. And my experience was, to be quite honest with you, I don't have a discernible memory or interaction with them, right? But again, it's not about, if it had little to no effect on me, doesn't matter as much to me as the negative effects that some have had on others. And I don't think my indifference to it, or maybe even to a positive extent, I mean, my positive experience outweighs those who have had negative experience, right? It's not individual, it's a structural thing. So I always, and that's how I look at it, right? It's a community thing. If something hurts someone else, it doesn't hurt me. Maybe we should do something to stop hurting them, right? Especially if it doesn't hurt me. So that's how I look at it, right? You know, individuals may have great experiences, but if that whole, the system is not effective to everyone, and it's inherently discriminatory. I mean, I saw the guy on the link, he said, you know, over 70-something percent of the arrests in schools are black students. That seems discriminatory to me, right? That doesn't reflect the makeup. That's not, you know, consistent with the actual makeup of CPS. I know CPS has a lot of black and brown students, but it's not 70% black. Or whatever the statistic was, it was very high, 70-something. I couldn't say the last digit. But, you know, so I think that's the tension that we have to deal with. I think that as a city, as a community, we need to stop thinking about me, right, the individual, and think about the whole, the collective. And so for me, right, no pun intended, for me, I think that, you know, I could have had a wonderful experience with officers at my school, but that's not worth someone else getting hurt. That's not worth someone else getting put in the criminal justice system at 14, 15, 16, or younger than that, right? So that's how I look at it, Ben. But I'm young, though, like you said.
Yeah, no, you're young and you're still, you haven't been beaten down by the system yet. God bless you. No, I tend to look at these things. How do I put this? If a school decides in its infinite wisdom, if the local school council in its infinite wisdom, at it, whatever the school is, decides that they want the police officer in their school, and that they have a police officer in their school that works well with the students of that school, that believes sort of in restorative justice. It's like a more of an officer-friendly model as opposed to a lock-em-up model, okay? If they feel confident that, I feel they should have the they should be allowed. That's their decision, right? That's local school governance. That's what it's all about. But they shouldn't have to pay for it with education money.
Right. Well, I agree with you on that. If in theory, let's say you ignore all the other data, which is a lot of data, but let's say you assume, hey, officers in school, it's up to the school. And I think, right, that makes sense. But I think what I would ask you back is that a false choice? You're not telling me, hey, here's $120,000. You can spend it on, like you said, another science teacher, or you can get a police officer. My understanding is that they said, you get a police officer or nothing.
Yes.
So even if you do, like, I think assuming there's officer friendly, he's in the school, he or she's in the school, they're doing great, they're mentoring kids, they're showing up at basketball games. I think if most schools could say, hey, you can have him or a counselor, you can have he or she or another science teacher, you can have he or she or, you know, like you said, an arts or drama teacher program. I think a lot of schools would choose that additional educational factor. Because I think the things that, based on your argument, right, like the officer friendly, police officers aren't the only people that can fill that role, right? I think all my biggest mentors in school were teachers and coaches. And a police officer could be a coach, right? But you don't need to be a police officer to be a coach, right? My coach, I think he worked at the gym, like, you know, down the street. He worked at 47th Street at the gym, right? He was a personal fitness trainer. But he had a huge effect on my life. And so I don't know if necessarily that dictates, like you said, the money coming out of CPS budget, in addition to the fact that as an LSC, you're getting a vote on it, but it's not really, it's not a holistic vote, right? And as I understand it, even if you don't take the officer in the school, part of that money, again, based on what they were saying on this link I watched yesterday, which they're telling me is city council, there's like a mobile unit that goes around for the ones that even don't have the school. And then there are like sergeants above that are assigned to different schools or different districts. And so even if you say no to that, you're still paying for it, like you said, out of that budget. And you don't get the ability to say, we would really love, you know, take that $120,000, however much it costs for an officer and benefits and stuff, to fix the intercom system or to get more books or to get another teacher or to paint the wall, whatever the school needs. So I think even if folks want it, it's still a false choice because you don't get autonomy, right? You don't get to truly make the decision. You're choosing to have something or not have something. Of course, you're naturally going to want it. It's alternative to nothing.
You're absolutely correct. And I'm pleading with the Board of Education not to continue this program. They should take that $33 million that they are right now giving to the police department. Keep that $33 million, most of which comes from property taxes that people like me pay, thinking it's going to the public schools for school things, and they should use that $33 million for whatever each individual school wants. So if Parkside wants a new librarian, or they want a new nurse, they want a social worker, they want a sign, whatever the local school council decides, you get the portion of that $33 million. That's how I view it. And let the city council come up with $33 million to pay for the police. Instead, what they do is they shuffle it over to the Board of Ed and they take it out of the school budget. And they do that to benefit the mayor and the police department, not the students of Chicago Public Schools. So that I'm with you 100% on that one, Dixon, and I'm hoping that the powers that be listen to you and me on the show. and change their minds. Let's see if that happens anytime soon. Before I leave the issue of schools behind, I want to get another pet peeve off my chest with you, get your reaction to it. There was a story in the paper the other day about how there many communities in the city of Chicago have inadequate internet access. Many of the poor families in the city of Chicago, some of them don't have computers or the internet access is really bad. So the city got together with some wealthy people, raised some money to improve internet access in poor neighborhoods. And you ready for this? So I'm reading this article. Everybody's patting everybody on the back for raising this money, looking out for the poor kids of Chicago, Dixon. They said it should be up and ready to go in 4 years. I'm like, 4 years? If you're a fourth grader at Parkside, that means you're going to go for the rest of your elementary school education without this internet access. This is the part where I get really cynical really fast, Dixon. If people really care about poor kids in the city of Chicago, why are they holding off giving them internet access, decent internet access, for 4 years? Can you help me grapple with this one?
You know, I have to say, to tell you the truth, I won't name my internet provider, but my internet is not great where I live. So, you know, I'm with you on that. The kids need it, but I need it too, you know. But all jokes aside, I think, yeah, that's hard to grapple with, because I'm sure there are technological and, you know, there's, you know, the science of how Wi-Fi works or internet works. I don't know that. But I do think, to your point, it seems to me, right, as a 26-year-old young person, most of the problems that we know about in these areas, folks know, right? And they've existed for, like you said, many years, maybe decades, maybe longer than that. So do I think 4 years is too long? Hell yes. I know that some of our students at Parkside, during, you know, the schools being closed due to the pandemic, you know, we gave out computers, and we gave every student, we gave a computer, but there were additional issues, like you said, with the internet, right? And this is where kind of those other issues that we talked about earlier in the show kind of coincide, right? Mm-hmm. You know, depending on who you ask, right, homeless is on the street, homeless is doubled up with somebody, homeless is, you know, my mom's friend, who I call an auntie, but not legally, or blood, you know, by blood, my actual auntie, but I live with them. You know, and they're, you know, so maybe we give kids a little hot spot or something, right? But there's still six people in their apartment or in their house or more, right? And so they're not going to deny their siblings or their parent access to this thing. And so it makes the device in itself less effective. And then you're right back where you started, right? You have less access to schooling through the internet. You have less access to, you know, internet in general, right? And so, yeah, I agree with you. This is something that, especially going forward, because I'm not sure, I'm not a scientist or anything like that, but I'm not sure that we're going to be, I don't know what school will look like in the fall. I imagine that it probably won't be super safe for us to go back to school in the fall. This is, again, I'm not speaking for anyone at first. I don't want to get anyone in trouble. I'm just saying, this picture of Romeo.
Yeah.
When I think about the fact that if we won't have a vaccine, if a lot of our schools, the number of students, I don't know how you would segment it so that folks can be separated. We know a lot of our kids are coming on the bus and they're coming from different places. And we also know that kids are kids, and sometimes, you know, they think they have their mask on right, but it might not be on right. And we know that we have teachers who, at least at Parkside, we have a ride or anything. We got teachers that are younger than me. We got teachers that are older than me and you combined, probably plus five more. You know, there's so many ways for things to go wrong or for people to get exposed. I don't get to make that decision. And whoever does, it's a tough one. I think that I know that our teachers have thoughts, right? Just teachers across the city. I know parents have thoughts across the city and students have thoughts. So all that being said is we don't know what that looks like in the fall. So it would seem to me like we would need to get internet up and running. Of course, no one prefers e-learning to the real thing being in the classroom, but again, I think it's less about me and more about we, right? Like, just the health, what are we willing to risk with that? The health of our students, the health of our teachers, of our staff, of their families, of the community. You know, I wouldn't risk that. So I think we need to get the internet up and running. We need it up and running 4 years ago, not in the next 4 years.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one. So, all right, well, we've made an agreement. We're going to discontinue that gentrifying neighborhood project, and we'll spend the money. Some of that $1.3 billion will be going on internet access. All right, before I let you go, I'm going to pick your brain on a totally different topic. Before we went on air, Dixon told me he was a movie fan. We talk a lot about movies on the Ben Jarofsky Show. We have special segments, Danielle Scruggs, Sergio Mims. We break down all the movies of the day. We also have recommendations. Our guests make recommendations. So, Dixon, before you head out the door, give us some recommendations. People staying at home on the 4th of July don't want to go outside. And what should they be watching? What are the movies that you recommend people watch?
Okay, sure. But I'll do this, but there's one more thing I want to say about Parks. I know you're talking for a long time. I don't want to hold the show up. So I'll do the movies, then I'll go back. Does that work?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think a classic movie to me, I don't know if you've seen it, Ben, but Boomerang with Eddie Murphy. I think it's a funny movie. I think it's a good movie. Have you seen Boomerang, Ben?
Boomerang? Are you kidding? John Witherspoon? With scene at the table. I don't want to say the scene. You got to whoop that beep. Yes, I've seen Boomerang. I just saw it. I just rewatched it about 2 months ago. It's hilarious. Eddie Murphy. Yes.
It's great. It's got everybody. John Witherspoon, like you said, rest in peace. Eddie Murphy. Halle Berry. I mean, it's got everybody. It's a great movie. I'm thinking a light movie. So I think, we have watched light stuff with everything going on. I think Into the Spider-Verse, I think, is a great movie. I do virtual movie nights with my friends sometimes, and we watch it. And everyone always complains about the movie. This is the one movie that everyone loves. I think the script is really tight. It's family friendly. It's got a good message, good action. You see Spider-Verse? Do you like Spider-Verse?
Wait, which one is? I think I did see it, but I'm getting it mixed up with about three other movies. What happens in Spider-Verse?
Spider-Verse is the one where it's multiple Spider-Mans, and we follow Miles Morales, who's the black and Latinx Spider-Man. And it's animated, and the Spider-Man, I don't want to ruin the plot too much, but I'm sure people have seen it. But they team up and they, beat the bad guy, and there are quirks along the way. They think they fail, but they really don't. And there's another hour, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Typical movie stuff.
Yeah. I have not seen that one. I could tell you that. I kind of like rebelled against Spider-Man movies about two Spider-Man movies again. Maybe I bailed on it too soon.
You're a Spider-Man 3 fan, that's why. I'm sure.
Which one was Spider-Man 3? Like I said, they all come together. Dee, do you remember Spider-Man 3?
Was Spider-Man 3 the one with, dancing? A lot of dancing?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That one was weird.
That seems like up your alley, Ben. That seems up your alley, Ben.
All right, I'll check out.
Then there's that one with Jamie Foxx. That one was not that good either.
Right. Now, I don't know what.
Wait, there was
Spider-Man 2.
No, there was one with Jamie Foxx. He played, Electro or whatever.
No.
Yeah, he's not Spider-Man, but.
Yeah.
He played that one was interesting, sure.
I did not know that. All right. And what about any others? Scary movies? You were mentioning scary movies, and now all of a sudden you're going with these comedies.
Oh, no. Of course, scary movies. I just watched The Lodge, which was terrible. I do not recommend that one. An absolute bore of a film. I used to watch Roger Ebert when I was little. I would give it -2 stars. I mean, it's not scary. It's not frightening. I think if you had it on the waiting room at a dentist's office, you'd put more people to sleep. I mean, it's just, they save money on those drugs they use to, knock you out and take out your wisdom tooth. So I think that's where I put The Lodge. I watched Heredity recently at Midsommar, which were both pretty scary, eerie movie that I thought had some interesting, you know, American Gothic themes going on there. Did you see those? What did you think about those?
Oh, yeah. Both of them I saw, and both of them scared me. Hereditary, the ending is preposterous, but it's a very scary movie. Before you get to that, that last like 5 minutes is just, all right, guys, you just, you jumped the shark here. But, no, I watched them both, same director. Yeah, maybe we'll bring you into our next, movie segment. We'll do scary movies with Sergio and Danielle. You said you wanted to mention one last thing about Parkside before I let you go.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, also I was, you know, I think about, do you have a favorite movie villain? I'm sorry, I'm taking over the interview, Ben, but I think the
go ahead. Deserve, no, the Dixon Romeos.
They have the right to know.
Do I right. have a favorite? God, a favorite villain? Well, I would say that I do not have a. But if you mean like a villain that I like, I can't think of a villain that I like.
What's a good movie villain for you?
So in other words,
you know, however you want to frame it.
Okay, so this movie, which you've never seen, and it's not an adventure movie. It's way before your time. But the villain in this movie, it's called Chinatown is the name of the movie. Noah Cross is the villain. He's the most evil, despicable, powerful man. He just imagine a person who controls, this is my kind of movie, absolutely everything in the town and gets all the people, the mayor, the board of ed, the public works commissioner to enact programs to benefit him. That's Noah Cross in Chinatown. He's the most despicable human being, and he's played by an actor named John Huston. He does it so well. You just hate the guy. So when I think, when you said villain, that's who popped in my mind. That's what I thought of. Chinatown came out in 1973 or 4, so it's way before your time, and that's why I knew you'd never seen it. So that's my... I hesitate to say my favorite, because I don't want to suggest in any way that I like him. But it's fascinating to watch him do his villainy thing.
He's a good movie.
Ben just watched. Ben just watched Next Friday a while back. Is Pinky from Next Friday considered a villain?
I could think Pinky. I think Debo and Friday the original.
Debo is the original villain. That's my bike.
He's more Shakespearean, I would say, in a sense. With a villainy. I have to say, though, Ben, you said something that I thought was quite ridiculous. So there's this thing, Ben, I don't know if you know about it, called Google.
Yeah.
And with Google,
okay.
Folks who may have been born in more recent years can go back and see the span of many things. Granted, that you have internet access, which we just talked about. So have I heard of this movie called Chinatown with Jack Nicholson? I may have heard of it once or twice.
Okay.
to be fair, I haven't seen it. Okay. It's on my queue. I just haven't watched it, but I just had to point that out.
Well, I'll tell you what. You should watch it because it's a good movie. But go ahead, yeah.
I think Debo is a good movie villain. I have my own personal Mount Rushmore movie villains. I'll do it real quick because I know you have other guests and important things in advertising. Have you seen New Jack City?
Yeah. I saw it when it first came out. And, oh, my God, which was... 1992, I want to say. You know, I'm really disappointed to say this. It's okay. You're going to really laugh at me, Dixon. I still get Netflix through the mail. And
I do too. It's okay.
You do? Okay. All right. I can't get it. I remember really liking it. And I wanted to rewatch it, like I did Boomerang. I'm going back and rewatching '90s movies, and they had Boomerang, but they didn't have New Jack City. Hey,
I tried this Google thing you were talking about. 1991, New Jack City.
Come on, man! Did I say? Come on.
Said 92.
You don't think Nino Brown's an amazing villain?
But you know, it's such a fuzzy memory in my head. That's why I wanted to rewatch it.
Yeah.
You know, and like a Chinatown I've seen 10 times, I want to say. In New Jack City I've only seen once. So anyway, but I just saw Wesley Snipes in another movie, and he was excellent. What was the movie I saw him in, D?
I don't know.
I went to the Eddie Murphy movie. It just came out. It was on
Dolomite.
Yes. Oh my God, Dolomite. He was so good in Dolomite. And how can I forget Dolomite? We had a whole discussion of Dolomite. I'm looking at Dennis like, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway,
have you ever seen Mean Girls?
Yeah, I saw Mean Girls when it I saw Mean Girls when it came out. I thank God, like, hello, Dixon. I saw Mean Girls when it came out a long time ago, and I can't remember the villain in Mean. That's another movie.
Regina George.
Yes.
Regina George.
Yeah. See, these are movies from the '90s, or maybe Mean Girls is early '00s.
I think Mean Girls was like, I was younger, so I think it was like 04, 05, 06, around that period.
Yeah. So
you were going to give us our the Mount Rushmore of movie villains, though.
Yes.
Who are they?
Go ahead.
Right. So to me, again, of course, I think for me, it's not about my favorite, but just who I think is a great villain who really just irks me and is all powerful. I haven't seen Chinatown, so maybe that character will make it up there. But I think Nino Brown's on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. They were shooting at him, and he picked up someone's kid, and he was just despicable, man. He was a despicable guy. The police caught him, and they were like, you know, trying to arrest him. He laughed at him and said, I'll be out in a day. Right? I mean, that's a great villain.
Yeah.
I think Regina George and Mean Girls, she just had everything under control. She knew where she was manipulative, right? She was evil. But she also was misunderstood. So, you know, you could relate a little bit. Not too much, though. For me, I don't have blonde hair. but who else? Mount Rushmore.
I think
Hannibal Lecter. I think it's a great movie villain.
He's good.
I think I like psychological villains. He's good. I don't approve of his diet per se, but you know, he's pretty dope. And then the last one. Have you ever seen Drumline?
Oh yeah, I saw Drumline. Yeah, Christmas this Day movie.
This villain was in the movie for probably a minute, but he had no lines. But this is the most menacing villain I've ever seen. He's on another team. And so for those who don't know, who may not have seen like Drumline is about HBCU. Mm-hmm. Young guy goes to the school. You know, he's on the drum. He's got a scholarship. He doesn't know how to read music. So he's got like a little teacher, right? So he has some folks. Band director's kind of old school. He's new school, right? So kind of like me and Ben. Same dynamic.
Yes.
So he's coming at his thing, and his girlfriend brings her family there. She wants to introduce, you know, her family to her new boo, right, from the school. And he's drumming, he's showing off, and the guy from another team just gives him a look. He's like, what? So he steps to him, and now he's drumming in his face. He's throwing dust at him. He's drumming on his drum. And this guy, he just gives him a face, and he's just looking at him, he's staring at him, and he gets a fight, and a fight breaks out, you know, embarrasses Nick Cannon in front of his girlfriend. That, to me, that villain, you know, that actor probably got, like, you know, $2 and a peanut butter sandwich for that role. But I think he, you know, he defined villainy to me. You know, he took the hero out of his element. He embarrassed him. He made him lose. That's, I think he deserves to be on that mountain. It's hard to do that with just your eyes.
All right.
So I think he deserves a spot on Mount Rushmore.
I just thought of two villains from the same movie.
Okay.
Which,
okay, same movie. All right.
Yeah. These two villains are so villainous. Is that a word?
Yeah.
They're so villainous, they may have to share a spot on Mount Rushmore. And that would be from Django, Samuel Jackson, and Leonardo DiCaprio. Samuel Jackson is one of the most despicable human beings in a movie I've ever seen. Okay? He just killed that role as a despicable, like, just think about what he did in the movie. And
right, I think
he was
a weaponized, empowered, yeah, Uncle Tom. Yeah.
Yes.
It was bad.
Yes. And he was the brains behind DiCaprio. He was like, he was telling, right, DiCaprio what to do. Remember that scene where they like went into the room, they were drinking the liqueur or whatever it was they were drinking, and he goes, "This is what."
Yeah, he gave him the play.
Yeah, he told him what to do.
He gave him the play.
Yeah,
he gave him the play.
Yeah, so there you go.
I think that is, it's really funny. Cut me off if you have to. We just watched Django, my movie night, and two things stuck out to me about Django. Outside of, I agree, Sam Jackson is the real brains behind the operation at the Candyland Ranch, but you know, I think we got to look at Christopher Schultz. Oh my gosh, Christopher Schultz character. I can't remember if that's the name in the movie or that's the real name.
Christopher Waltz.
Waltz, thank you. And his name was something Schultz, right?
Yeah.
He was Django's mentor. He was the real villain to me. Or the second villain after Samuel. He blew the whole deal up with DiCaprio. If no one listening to this hasn't seen Django, I'm sorry. so he blew the whole deal up over an inconvenience. That's crazy. He said, you know, I watched a guy get eaten by a dog. I was okay with it. You know, you basically stole money from me. I was okay with it. You put a gun to my head. I was okay. But you want me to shake your hand? Nah, man, I got to.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
I'm willing to risk my life for that. I'm willing to risk my life for that. Like, hey, Django. Hey, Broomhilda, I'm sorry. I know we got you this far, but.
You're right. That was. Yeah, he did watch the guy get eaten up by a dog. But this line is one I cannot cross, okay? So, by the way, as long as you're doing Tarantino villains, come on now. Waltz in Inglourious Bastard is the evil Nazi, is a horrible villain. And Samuel Jackson as the villain in Jackie Brown is a horrible villain. Too. So, there we go. I'm just putting Quentin Tarantino villains up on Mount Rushmore and calling it a day.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a great conversation for a party or something. The Mount Rushmore of movie villains.
Well, you know what? I think Dixon, he passed the audition. He knows his movies. We're going to bring him on with Danielle. And
congratulations.
You passed the audition. Dixon, you get to be what movie did we do? Oh, we just did Defy Bloods. We did a whole Spike Lee thing about 2 weeks ago. And we've done Quentin Tarantino. So maybe we'll just do a whole show.
If you're doing movies, if you do movies, let me know. I'll make time. I love talk. I could talk for years about it.
All right, very good. Dixon, Romeo, thank you so much for being on the show. Take care, everybody.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.